con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
We're a quarter of the way through the AFL home and away season. It's been a heavy news cycle this week. I think both of us, Josh,
exhausting,
keen not to get too bogged down in that today. So it's a bit of a standalone episode. It's Code AFL Show's Footy Gripes edition. We're going to get on our soapbox and have a whinge. We're going to use our platform to be negative about the game in the hopes that it can spark some positive change.
What we want is to be angsty for good, you know? It's not all, it's for a good reason.
Mm. Other than our main grievance is that we don't have a third chair for the main body of this
podcast. I feel quite exposed in this sort of one-on-one setup. This is our version of a bottle episode, really, isn't it?
We're
really taking it mano a mano for our gripes.
Yeah, it's sort of on the couch if they're both armchairs facing each other.
On the armchairs?
Yes, on the chairs. I want to start on the rules. You wrote an interesting piece that's about to go online on Code Sports and the Herald Sun about how the new rules have affected the game. We know that Greg Swan came in with the hope that it would speed the game up. One thing I wanted to point out, though, straight off the top, is we live in a world where your opponent can handball the ball into your shin and win a free kick under the lasso rule, and I'm not really sure if that's what the new rule was brought in to do. So I'm a bit cranky about that, Josh.
Yeah, I don't agree with the state of the lasso rule in terms of the what we're paying at the moment. So I was always under the impression that it was a last disposal rule, but it's clearly a last touch if it's the boot or a handball rule. So that's essentially what it's become, and I don't think that's really fair. We're seeing a lot of instances where players are tackling each other, the ball falls from one of them and then hits a boot on the way out. Nobody really knows whose boot it is, and then we go up to the arc and spend 3 minutes trying to find out whose boot it is. Or Alex Neilbourne was widely praised for this a couple of weeks ago, and it was a smart play, but why does he get rewarded for handballing the ball into someone's shin? I don't really understand. That was on the full, that one, but I don't really understand why players are being encouraged to go into that, which is not a football play anyway. So there's only been 4.5 lasso free kicks per match so far this year, which is maybe a little bit less than expect. And only 10 in total for the whole season have resulted in a score. So it's not really affecting the scoreboard that much, but it's just frustrating. And it's frustrating when it makes us go to the arc to look at whose boot touched the ball.
That handball into the shin, that's meant to be a very low percentage play. Like the odds of it ricocheting off out on the full are quite small. So then when you go to it being able to trickle out and getting that free kick, we're going to see that motion more and more. I think that'll really annoy fans if that Neilbourne incident keeps popping up in games, because that's not the way players should be playing if we're trying to speed the game up, keep the ball in play.
Yeah, and that is one of the points of the rule, is that it's supposed to make the game faster. We saw on the weekend North Melbourne player Luke McDonald tackled someone, the ball went out of bounds, a clear handball. Dylan Simmons picked up the ball, ready to kick it, and started North Melbourne attack, and the umpires conferred for a minute or so, holding up the play completely, which is just against the spirit of the rule. So I find it frustrating. But, I mean, I find arc intervention always frustrating, and listeners to this show will know that. I think we've seen too many video reviews. That's one of my gripes. Jared Waitley agrees with me. He was off his rocker a little bit on the weekend about the ball going over the point post, and we're looking at that now, which we can never, ever tell from the vision we see why that's been changed, whatever decision it is. It's frustrating, and it's just annoying. But it's good for crypto.com, Ed, which is
it
really
is.
Important.
It is. I've spoken to some conspiracy theorists in my inner circle who believe that the crypto.com sponsorship of the review might be the reason that goal umpires are so down on their confidence at the moment and sending things upstairs. Let's have this is a key grievance of mine, this crypto.com partnership. We're in the final year. It's the fifth and last year of this deal. Don't think it's going to be renewed at this stage. Part of this deal with crypto.com was an online marketplace called AFL Mint, which is still going.
Never heard of it.
You might remember NFTs. They were a big thing for about a month in 2021 when this partnership started. I've had a look at the NFTs that are still available on the AFL website, and it's worth noting they keep rolling out new sets. You can get a Sam Grill NFT.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, on the Mint. You can get a Lachlan Carmichael NFT. He hasn't played a game yet.
Yeah. Sounds okay.
You can buy 3 Lachlan Carmichael moments for $10 or 5 for $25. But I wanted to run you through a few of the more obscure ones. There's a bit of a range on here, and this isn't financial advice. Please don't go investing in these products. That's my financial advice in my capacity as a personal, non-financially qualified advisor. Rourke wraps up D's Danger Man. That is Rourke Smith in the 2021 grand final, tackling Christian Petrarca, resulting in a ball up. And there are 10 of those for sale for $1.
I was a big fan of Rourke Smith, so I cannot remember him playing in a grand final. So That's one thing to remember it forever. Can you actually tell me before you're on to the next one what actually you're talking about? Like, what is this?
It's like a 20-second clip from a game, like a little highlight reel, and you're meant to be given exclusive digital ownership of this highlight reel, and they manipulate the scarcity of these. So there are 228 of these Rourke Smith wrapping up Petrarca clips in circulation and 10 available. It does. Yeah, I'm not quite sure about how the economics of these work. I was looking through, there's a lot of Melbourne AFLW moments that are in the NFT marketplace. One is Goldrick Fearless in defensive contest. This is during a home and away game. It's available for 99 cents. It looks like 223 people have purchased these. So okay. They're going off in Ireland. Shout out to Sinead for that moment. But it varies to as expensive as Joel Selwood's fairy tale goal in the 2022 grand final, which is available for $2,900.
$2,900, so $2,900.
Because they only released 20 of those ones. It's in the elite category of NFT. So I'm not sure what's going on there. It clearly didn't have the impact that they intended to, but the AFL is still part of a partnership that is selling these bizarre moments that you could just look up on YouTube and watch for free to have in your collection.
That is a bizarre gripe. I don't really know what even to make of that at all, Ed. I feel like normally I'm more enlightened after I speak to you, but I'm not sure I've really gained anything out of being run through AFL Mint. And I'm not sure it matters. We were taken aback, I suppose, in the journalistic fraternity this week when we had another Ross Lyon attack on one of our fellow brethren over in Adelaide.
We weren't surprised, but we were aggrieved.
Who we play after Brisbane? Huh? Can't hear. Yeah, so Port Adelaide. Yeah, and then around us, interstate, and then Adelaide. Did they play finals or something? Adelaide didn't play finals. Did Adelaide play finals?
No.
Did Adelaide play finals last year?
Yeah, Adelaide.
Okay.
Yeah.
One final, two finals?
Yeah.
Two. Did they make a prelim?
No.
Lost. I can't remember.
Lost.
Yeah. I think that's a gripe. I think Ross can be a little bit aggressive. You've been through a lot of Ross press conferences. What's your worst run-in and how do you approach them?
Well, I've seen a lot more prickly Ross than cuddly Ross in my time so far at press conferences. And I do wish that someone had briefed me on what to expect when I walked into my first ever Ross presser. Probably early in the 2023 season, I came in and I went in there without an agenda. I just wanted to ask him for his thoughts on a particular part of the game. I can't remember exactly what it was. I was immediately hit with the, "Oh no, what do you think?" I just froze.
He's a quick.
I was not expecting to be put on the spot at one of my first press conferences, just asking a coach for his thoughts on something. I didn't have my thoughts ready. I don't know what happened after that, but it was sort of a weird standoff where he was just staring at me for a while. I couldn't believe what I'd just heard. I'd been questioned. I'm not sure how I got out of that one, but I wanted to just shrink up and fall into a hole.
Yeah, well, it's clearly a tactic from Ross because as the journalist, you ask the question, but you're expecting them to answer it, and then you're thinking of the next question to ask. But when they bounce it back to you, you're not ready for that. You're thinking about, I'm going to ask him about something in the third quarter, and then he immediately says, well, what do you think? And then often the defense is, well, nobody cares what I think. But is that the right strategy with Ross at the moment? Because then he even ridiculed that on the weekend.
Yeah, and some people do care what we think as well, which is why we have a platform.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. You don't want to
everybody watching and listening loves what we think.
You don't want to completely degrade your opinion. Let's workshop this quickly. I'll be Ross Lyon. You're a journalist at the St Kilda West Coast game. St Kilda's just lost by 15 points. Probably won't happen on the weekend, but let's just say for the sake of the workshop that has happened. What are you starting with?
Well, the traditional with the Ross Lyon press conference is to start with the, what did you think about that, mate? And then you get a good 6 minutes of monologuing from Ross.
Yeah, so Ross will have written down some stats on his piece of paper. He goes through the match stats and then writes down a few notes. He'll now take this first question and he'll read from his notes in a 2 to 5 minute monologue on what he wants to say about the game. So, you know, look, 11 ground ball gets to 6 in the forward 50. You know, there's no magic potion for this stuff. We're under no illusions, but there's a bit of growth. And he just kind of continues on like that for 2 or 3 minutes. How then do you try and get the question answered that you originally wanted to ask?
Well, that's the hard part because then he'll often say, I've already answered that, and he'll go in his own direction. And if they lose to West Coast, they'd be 2-5 on the season. So you'd be reasonable, I think, to say, what's your concern with this season? Where are you headed this season? You're 2-5. Are you worried about the season? And that's where you can also get into trouble.
I do think St Kilda has improved a little bit this season, so that's not a grievance that I'm airing at this time. But it is a strange mentality that he's taking into these press conferences when it is the place for the coaches to speak to the fans. We're really just there to be the intermediary and allow the coaches to deliver the message that they want to their fans. And I think sometimes he does forget that, but that's him speaking to St Kilda supporters rather than just addressing the journalist.
Yeah, but as the president says, if you ask stupid questions, you get stupid answers.
You do. We're not going to get stupid answers from Corey Mobilio. We're going to bring him in for a moment. We're going to stop our whinging and try and pick up spirits
just
a bit.
Just for a moment, yeah.
And we'll shift some furniture around and get Corey in from Champion Data to have his say ahead of round 7. For those watching, the Code AFL team has just put on an interior design masterclass to fit Corey Mobilio into the studio. Great to have you with us, Corey, from Champion Data, and congratulations on some sample size.
Yes, no, so happy. Monday morning, all rocked into the office, we were pumped, but no, thanks for having me back on.
You've had your eye on the Western Bulldogs this week. Luke Beveridge loves being back to the wall. I think some of his best coaching in the last few years has come when he's had to spin some magnets to account for injuries or key players being out of form. What do you think he needs to do to keep the Bulldogs season on the rails?
Yeah, I think the defensive profile has been well spoken about. Like, everyone's across that. They've been, quite poor defensively and haven't improved.
Still struggling.
So 17th for winning a defensive 50 contest. Should be, well in the positive for that measure. They're breaking even, if not losing that. On average this year, scores per inside 50 against their 13th. Last year, they were 11th. So no real major improvements there. Kind of the aspect of their game that hasn't necessarily been spoken about is their territory profile and just what they're doing in their forward half. And I think largely this is due to how they're defending their opposition this year. They're allowing them to chain up the ground, concede uncontested marks, and hopefully get numbers back behind the ball. But so this year, they're 11th for inside 50 differential. Last year, they were number one in the competition. Winning a forward half intercept, they're 17th. Scoring from a forward half intercept, they're 13th this year. So yeah. I think, obviously largely due to how they're defending their opposition, but there are a couple magnets which I think are worth exploring in the back half of this year to see, what they can do and pose a threat and ask questions of their opposition.
What are you moving around then?
Yeah, I think the number one is Bontempelli. So I'm not saying removing.
Tell me you keep him in the centre bounce. I need the super coach points.
100%. So keep him, give him his centre bounce minutes. Plus 29 clearances when he's in there. Minus 8 when he's out of a centre bounce this year. So I'm not saying remove his centre bounce time, but I'd like, centre bounce forward, 40-50% game time as a forward. It's around that 20% mark this year. Because what we've seen since the start of last year, the Doggies have scored a goal 50% of the time he's been targeted inside 50, yep. Comfortably number one in the competition. And I think it's more, taking a lesser load off Norton. So when Darcy wasn't in the side last year, they were the number one scoring offense in the competition, but they were playing differently. That territory profile isn't the same as last year, to what it is this year. So to say that's just going to drag and drop, I think is wrong. They're playing a different way. So, like I said, ask questions of the opposition. Get him forward. Take a bit of, pressure off Norton. Take some pressure off of Croft. Hopefully Waitman returns into that team. And the other one is Bailey Dale. So, look, he's going okay. His game against Geelong was actually quite good, but in the previous two seasons, he's been a top 10 rated player in the competition.
Okay.
This year, he sits just outside the 100. And we've seen him tinker with his magnet this year, wing forward. Just, is it worth exploring him more in that forward half of the ground? The back end of 2019, he went ballistic and gave him something different in that forward half. So I think, behind the ball is personnel. That's an off-season issue. Yep. But I think in season, may as well explore what you have.
That would be interesting if they threw Bailey Dale forward. It was 21 goals in 10 games in 2019. I just looked at that yesterday. One thing with him, though, is he had the knee injury in the preseason. He did pretty well to get up for opening round, and you wonder if that's still affecting him, Josh, because Ed Richards as well has looked like he's laboured a bit the last couple of weeks getting to the line to play. I feel like they just need to get these guys a clean bill of health.
Yeah, they need a lot of clean bills of health. Bontempelli's another one. He looked like he jarred his knee on the weekend.
He was
he'll be a test to play this weekend. Maybe he needs a bit of time resting forward, though. That could be a key move.
Yeah, he looked sore at training. We'll see how he goes for Thursday night against the Swans. Now, the Ds, 4-2 start.
Flying.
Lighting up the MCG on Sunday afternoons.
Ed just came into the office this week jigging after he was there on Sunday afternoon. Yeah, he's still going.
The Irish jig, yeah. It we should add that to our list of grievances. But great to have some Irish dancing at the G, but just the one tune the whole time. Mm. So every time after a Melbourne goal, the same jingle. It started to get a little bit grating. I think they need to introduce 3 or 4 next year potentially, but I love the idea, and it was great to have free entry for the
bit of U2 or something.
Yeah. The unheralded stars,
yes,
that are leading the way for Melbourne this season. Can you go through a few names that people might be surprised by who are really having an impact?
Yeah, we'll play a bit of a game off the back of this, but I think we put them on radar after the St Kilda win. You know, they're going to be attractive to watch. I think as a Melbourne fan, there's a clear identity regime under King, new regime. You know, they're aggressive with their ball movement. They're exciting. 4 wins at the G. Yeah. I think, you know, you want to tune into Melbourne games now, but it's a couple of these players, and 3 in particular, where, you know, they've been in the system for long enough now, and I think, you know, King is really starting to get the best out of him. So first one is Cade Chandler. Where would you think he rates among forwards in the competition this year?
The chin among forwards, 60s maybe?
60s?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say 30s.
30s. So this year we've got him as the number 6 rated forward in the competition.
Sorry, chin.
You look at the second half on Sunday against Brisbane, 400 metres gained, 10 score involvements, 2 goals. That's never been done. Just in the half. Wow, never been done by a Melbourne player on record. Got the 8 coaches' votes. I think he's been really important, and he's improved his ball winning. He's up around that 15-16 disposal mark. Forward presence has been really good, you know, ability to work contest to contest. So a big tick this year. This one, I will preface it, with Hoiney has been on this guy. He put him on watch two or so weeks ago. Is Harvey Langford, where is he among wingmen in the competition?
Yeah, I was a little bit concerned with him at the start of the year that he should be playing in the ball, I think a little bit more inside, but he's really developed on that wing and is doing a pretty good job. He can't be better than Dempsey though, so I don't know, 4 or 5?
Yeah, he's like a fast Jordan Lewis. Yeah, I'd say 4 or 5.
Fast
as well.
Jordan Lewis.
Yeah. We've got him as number 1 this year.
Oh, better than Dempsey.
Yeah, Dempsey was number 3 in the competition last year among wingmen. So I must say, like I said, Hoiney, put him on watch. His ability to go deep and take his opposition to full forward essentially has been, you know, evident this year. 650 metres gained against Brisbane this across the match. 3 goals, 2 goal assists. He's been, you know, his running power is obviously quite strong. I think that Ollie Dempsey mould has been, you know, dragged and dropped, and Langford's the beneficiary of it with Melbourne this year. The other one is Harry Sharp. Where would you think he is among forwards this year?
I was shocked when I reported last year that he won a 3-year deal when coming to Melbourne, and he really hadn't done much to start his career in a new club. Last year, obviously a victim of a different game style, and he looks so much freer now. He'd have to be pretty up there, I think, especially among improvers.
Yeah. So we've got him as just outside the top 20 forwards this year, 23 of all forwards in the competition this year. So I think he's one who's benefited from probably the sub rule being removed and how Melbourne are playing. So, you know, he just breaks 2K records or 3K records for fun. His running power's really evident. I think in fourth quarters this year, 40% of his rating points have been won in fourth quarters. It's a big number. So, you know, he's been in the system for long enough now. You know, I kind of look at Chandler and Sharp and I think of, you know, Manor, Dempsey and Myers. Obviously, those players have got the runs on the board, but, you know, King coming from Geelong, you know, just tinkering with some magnets. Obviously, Langford and Dempsey's a dead ringer, the way that they're trying to explore that matchup. And
yeah, I find with Sharp in particular, he reminds me a lot of Alex Neil-Bowen back in his Melbourne days, running between the arcs, helping out in defence and being the one that kicks it inside 50 often or getting on the end of it. I think he's really slotted into that role really well.
The other one who's obviously been in the comp for a while now is Jack Steele, and we've got him as the 26th rated player in the game this year. Last year, 289. So we know what he brings to the coalface, you know, clearances. He's applied the 3rd most tackles by a Melbourne player after round 6 on record. You know, they're getting, you know, a lot out of him. Ball winning, averaging his 3rd most disposals in a season. So that's been a big tick for Stephen King and the new regime. And like I said at the start of this chat, I think they're a fun team to watch. You know, I actually really look forward to watching him week on week. You know, the defensive stuff, I think, is a back end of 26 problem into next year. Not too worried about it. I think, you know, they can hang their hat on who they are as a football club.
Some positive signs for Melbourne there, that they might get walloped every 3 or 4 weeks, but they're very fun the rest of the time. So it's excellent to get some insight from you there, Corey. Thanks very much for coming in and joining us.
You got a gripe for us, Corey, on the way out?
No, I'm not. No.
Too much in the data.
Grant free.
Champion
happy.
Data isn't allowed to sort.
We'll cut that bit out then.
We love it. No, thanks for having me.
Okay, time to get back to our whinging. Josh, do you have a gripe about the AFL fixture?
My gripe is less with the fixture itself and more with the people that are upset over the fixture, which I'm sorry, there'll be a lot of people probably shaking their heads at this, but I'm not really sure what the uproar was about the double Friday night double headers that people were upset about. I understand the theory that GWS and Sydney want to grow the game and all that sort of stuff, but the GWS Sydney game was on it free to air in Sydney, so they didn't miss out on that market. And when you lose a game from Saturday and it goes on to Friday night, that means we're missing a double up on a Saturday when people are less likely to watch anyway. So I don't really understand what's gone wrong there. I don't mind the double headers on Friday. I think it allows you to watch one game and then catch the end of another one, which is what we do on Saturdays anyway. So I don't really understand what the upset nature is.
I'm surprised I haven't thought about it that way, but you're right. There's going to be a double up either way.
Traditionally, we have two Saturday night games. Yeah, that's the tradition is we have two on there. That's how it was round one. There were two Friday night games. That was when we had nine games that week. Two Saturday night games. Sorry, we had nine games that week. So if you're just moving one of the double ups there to a Friday night, then I think that's fine with me.
Absolutely. I'm happy with that. I actually agree with you. I don't have a gripe with your gripe.
What about you? You're at the MCG on Sunday. Melbourne is just living the dream on those Sunday arvos at the G at the moment. Can we capitalise more on that?
Yeah, they're not there very often on a Sunday coming up. They've got eight more games at the MCG this year. I think only one of them at the moment is scheduled for a Sunday afternoon. That would have been great just to... Well, no one knew that they were going to go this well, but to lock in Sunday afternoon as a weekly ritual for some fans, they'd take that over Thursday night games or Friday night games. Maybe you don't need to get an equal share of Thursday. We'll try and have an equitable share of Thursday and Friday night games for some of these teams, because if they can create a weekly routine with their fans, it can be so special. And we've seen that with Demon supporters. I do have a problem with the complete disdain for Tasmania's Anzac Day Observance Act of 1929. Yeah. What was going on there? Hawthorn Gold Coast in Launceston, slated for 12:15 PM, when legally it wouldn't have been allowed to start until 12:30 PM. So if the ball had been bounced at 12:15 and it was in the violation of this Tasmanian law, who would have been held criminally liable?
I guess the fixture man is Josh Bowler at AFL House.
So Josh Bowler is the one who goes to Launceston Reception Prison, the maximum security prison in Launceston?
Well, that's not the penalty, is it, Ed? What happens if you break this rule?
I did check. It's up to a maximum $40,400 fine would have been the penalty rather than a prison sentence.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully that wouldn't come out of Josh Bowler's pay. It could probably come out of Andrew Dillon's. He could probably afford it a little bit more. It is unusual. I don't think the AFL has ever run into this. The thing with this means, though, that it's pushed back this game by 15 minutes and they've pushed back the Anzac Day game slightly as well. So they moved it forward last year to help Channel 7 essentially get out of these games in the afternoon before the news, or just into the news, because they were running over every single time. But now with the Anzac Day one, we're probably going to miss the medal ceremony if we run in over time. So that means we miss the annual Darcy Moore victory speech that he gives every time they win, which everybody praises afterwards.
The annual eloquent speech.
We're going to miss either a Nick Dacos speech or the zoomed in camera of Nick Dacos being upset that again he's been ignored for a medal, which I think everybody would enjoy that. So you're not going to see that on 7. So I put to you, Ed, that for 7, it would be worth a $40,000 fine to make the most of their lead into the news. It's going to be the most watched home and away game probably of the year. It's probably going to lead into potentially the most watched game into a news of the year. So I think that 5 minutes that they've lost now is worth $40,000 to them. So they should have just forked over a check to the AFL and said, stuff the Anzac Day law in Tasmania.
You know how much money we're talking about, right? Like $40,000, that's 13,000 of the NFT. No. Mills makes most of 50 metre penalty on the AFL Mint website. That's a lot of money.
Not bad from you, Ed.
Mick McGuan, our Herald Sun AFL analyst, has got a piece coming out you can read on Code Sports and the Herald Sun website about whose flag hopes have been extinguished. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but Josh, is there anyone that you
Richmond
think is already
is
out of
the running,
race?
Would you say?
Richmond's out of the running, okay.
Yeah, okay, that's a shock there from Mick McGuan. But from my vantage point, I think Richmond is a line through. Essendon, you got a line through. Impossible to see Carlton winning the flag from here, so they put a line through them. West Coast are out. What am I at? 4 there. GWS, maybe I'll keep them in. Port Adelaide, they're out. That's 5. I think the Western Bulldogs are out, despite them sitting 7th. Even with the Sam Darcy injury, as we heard from Corey only moments ago, their defensive profile is a serious concern. They haven't fixed the one issue that cost them the finals last year, and now they're going to be missing probably their second best player for the rest of the year. So I can't see them winning the flag now. Those are my main ones. I'd be extremely surprised if Melbourne won the flag. Collingwood's teetering. St Kilda I'd probably have out, but any surprises for the teams you're putting a line through?
I wouldn't put a line through the Dogs just yet. Agree with most of yours. The grand final's played at the MCG, so I am leaving Melbourne in the equation if they can
get themselves there.
It's not on a Sunday arvo, which is a bit of a shame for them. But how long is the season going to drag on for these teams if once we get to 24 games per club and an international trip somewhere in the middle of that because the AFL's expanding? That's going to be a real drag if we do get that fixture length.
Yeah, good reporting from John Ralph and Glenn McFarlane this week on Code Sports about the changes when Chazzie comes in, that it's probably likely we go to a 24-game season, which just feels long. It feels long to me. 23 games is too many, I think. 24 is even longer. Potentially we can throw in an international trip, as the boys reported there. We're always putting our hands up for any kind of junket we can get on, Ed. So where would you like to go if Port Adelaide and St Kilda decide to go overseas again?
Oh, I didn't want it to be Port Adelaide, St Kilda, the game I wanted to watch. I was thinking something a bit more rogue, like Fremantle, Gold Coast. And I want it played in Barbados. I'd like to go to the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm on board with that.
Caribbean junket would be fantastic. A bit of a cost for the AFL. You got to get there out of Miami. So everyone needs one of those US visas to get through.
Delete all your search history,
yeah,
too.
Yes, some players might get blocked. We'll see. But that adds a bit of drama. It adds a bit of texture to the international trip. Not all the players can get across, or they have to be sort of get there around the US, so they kind of have to go by boat or something, or fly out of London. So there's a few different elements if we can get that kind of junket. What are you proposing?
I would love to go to Dublin. I think we can pull it off. But I saw this week the robot race in Beijing. I wonder if we could filter in a robots versus players kind of game in Beijing. I think that would be interesting. I think the robots have potential. I think they've got some class. They're a bit stilted in their gameplay, a little bit Simon Goodwin-esque. So they need to be freed up by a new coach like a Stephen King. But I think they've got potential. So I think that could be a potential path for a 20th team.
This reminds me of a niche AFL official novel that came out about 20 years ago when I was back in Auskick called Crunch Time by Boyd Hicklin, where the AFL mascots had to play a team of robots, basically for their survival. So you can look that book up. It's probably available in your local library.
Can you get it off AFL Mint?
There's no NFTs of it.
That's a shame. I'm not interested then.
Thank you very much for joining us ahead of round 7. Please don't go buying any AFL NFTs off the AFL Mint marketplace if you can. But I mean, ultimately, it's up to you. It's been great to have you with us for our Footy Gripes edition of the Code AFL show. You can follow all our coverage of the lead up to round 7 and the matches on the Code Sports and Herald Sun website.